Mirror world street furniture. Bits of urban infrastructure she can't identify by function. Local equivalents of the mysterious water testing station on her block uptown, which a friend had claimed to contain nothing more than a tap and a cup for the judging of potability, this having been for Case a favorite fantasy of alternative employment, to stroll Manhattan like an itinerant sommelier addressing one's palate with the various tap waters of the city. Not that she would have wanted to, particularly, but simply to believe that someone could do this for a living had been somehow comforting. By the time they arrive at Notting Hill, whatever rogue aspect of personality has been driving this morning's expedition seems to have decamped, leaving her feeling purposeless and confused. She pays the Russian, gets out on the side opposite Portobello, and descends the stairs to a pedestrian tunnel that smells of Friday night urine. Overly tall Mirror World lager cans are crushed there like roaches. Corridor metaphysics. She wants coffee. But the Starbucks on the other side up the stairs and around the corner is not yet open. A boy inside wrestles huge plastic trays of cellophaned pastries. Uncertain what she should do next, she walks on in the direction of the Saturday market, 7:30 now. She can't remember when the antiques arcades open, but she knows the road will be jammed by 9. Why has she come here? She never buys antiques. She's in a street of what she thinks are called muse houses, little places, scarily cute, still headed toward Portobello and the market. When she sees them, 3 men, variously jacketed, their collars up, staring gravely into the open trunk of a small and uncharacteristically old Mirror World car. Not so much a Mirror World car as an English car, as no equivalent exists on Case's side of the Atlantic to Mirror. Vauxhall Wyvern, she thinks, with her compulsive memory for brand names, though she doubts that this is one of those, whatever those might have been. As to why she notices them now, these 3, she later will be unable to say. No one else in the street, and there is something in the gravity they bring to their study of whatever it is they are looking down at, careful poker masks. The largest, though not the tallest, a black man with a shaven head, is zipped like a sausage into something shiny, black, and only approximately leather-like. Beside him is a taller, gray-faced man, hunched within the greasy folds of an ancient barber waterproof, its waxed cotton gone the sheen and shade of day-old horse dung. The third, younger, is closely cropped and blonde, in baggy black skater shorts and a frayed jean jacket. He wears something like a mailman's pouch, slung across his chest. Shorts, she thinks, drawing abreast of this trio, are somehow always wrong in London.